Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 30, Chapter entitled The Disappearance of the Yadu Dynasty, Text Number 4. Shri Rishi Ravacha Divi Ubi Antarikshe Cha Mahatpatan Samutitan Drishtva Sinan Sudamyayam Krishna Praha Yadun Idam Divi Bhuvyantarikshecha Mahatpatan Sumutitan Drishtva Sinam Sudamayam Krishna Praha Yadunidam. Sri Rishi Uvacha. The sage Sukadeva Goswami said, Divi in the sky, Bhuvi on the earth, Antarikshe in outer space, Cha and Maha Udpatan, great disturbances. Samutitan, which had appeared. Drishtva, seen. Asinan, who was seated. Sudamayam, in the legislative assembly called the Sudama. Krishna, Lord Krishna, Praha, spoke. Yadun, to the Yaduns. Idam, yes. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Sukadeva Goswami said, having observed many disturbing signs in the sky, on the earth and in outer space, Lord Krishna addressed the Yadus assembled in the Sudama Council Hall as follows. Translation responsibly. Sukadeva Goswami said, having observed many disturbing signs in the sky, on the earth and in outer space, Lord Krishna addressed the Yadus assembled in the Sudama Council. Hall as follows. Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, the inauspicious sign in the sky was the appearance of a halo around the sun. On the earth there were small earthquakes, and in outer space there was an unnatural redness on the horizon. These and other similar omens were impossible to counteract because they were personally arranged by Lord Krishna. Amagyan Tivanandasya Ginunjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Vansha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Pyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadata Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, so it is mentioned here that This chapter is called The Disappearance of the Yadu Dynasty. So the Yadu Dynasty is about to leave the earth. So we understand that when the Krishna and Krishna's associates come to the earth, it is simply an arrangement of Krishna's Atmamaya, or his internal potency, which is also known as Yogamaya. It is not to do with anything in the material world. So when Krishna he enters into this world, it is an appearance. It is not a birth like what we go through. It is considered that birth, death, old age and disease are impediments, or they are inconveniences for the soul when he enters into the material world. But when Krishna comes, it is not like the way we come into this world. It is an appearance. It is not a birth. We are born into this material world. We are forced by our previous karma, our previous activities, to accept a particular womb in this world. So we're forced to enter that womb. We remain in that womb in a trapped condition. And after some time, we leave that womb in a very uncomfortable way, like that. And then we don't even remember the first 1 year, 2 years of our life. The youngest memory I have in this lifetime is when I'm about 18 months old at one of my great auntie's houses. That's the earliest I can remember. So we don't even remember the very beginning of our life. So it is an imposition on the soul. We have no control. In the material world, Krishna describes in the 16th chapter of the Gita that people come to the material world thinking, Ishwaraham, Aham Bhogi, Siddhoham, Balavan, Sukhi. Right? This is material consciousness. Material consciousness is, I am Ishwara, I am Bhogi. I come to this world, why? Because I want to enjoy. I want Bhoga. Bhoga means that which is to be enjoyed. That is for me. In the spiritual world, all the Bhoga is to be offered to Krishna. Everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. But when we somehow or other develop a desire to enjoy the bhoga, to become the bhakta or the enjoyer, as opposed to being the bhakta or the devotee, then at that time we are cast into the material world. And in the material world we think ourselves to be bhogis. We think we are enjoyers. I will enjoy. But what is the enjoyment that we have in the material world anyway? How limited is the enjoyment in the material world? Just like we've seen in the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, massive floods all over the world, right? Brazil is underwater, right? 500 people died in the floods, right? Philippines, underwater. Australia, underwater. Right? At this point in time, in the Murray River, the water is 30 or 40 kilometers wide, is slowly moving down towards Mildura. Yeah? Basically just destroying everything in its path. So what can you really enjoy? Just like I was at the farm on Friday, Saturday, and then I was speaking to some devotees in Melbourne. They said, it is raining cats and dogs in Melbourne. So I didn't even know. We were at the farm. We didn't even know there was any rain taking place. Then we looked on the internet and we saw Melbourne's flooding. Here in St Kilda, it was 4 foot in water in some of the streets. Elwood, pictures of Elwood, up to the windows of the car. Like that. So, what sort of enjoyment is that? How much enjoyment are you actually having? You're trying to enjoy, but how much are you actually achieving? The nature of the material world, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Dukhalayam Ashashvatam. Krishna says, I make it miserable. So, it is a contradiction. You come to the material world to enjoy, and Krishna says, I make it miserable. So then how much can you actually enjoy? You've come here to enjoy, and Krishna says, I'm going to make it miserable. So then what is taking place? It is called Maya. Maya means, even though I am not enjoying, even though I've experienced so far mainly pain and suffering, but still I think I will continue to enjoy. That is the potency of Maya. That is called illusion. Right? But Maya means that which is not. There's no happiness, but you think it's happy. You think, I will be happy. Well, where is the happiness? Where is the proof of happiness in the material world? It's not there. Right? So, we come to the material world, we think we are bogi and we think we are Ishwara. Ishwara means the controller. Who is the Parameshwara? Parameshwara is Krishna. Krishna means supreme controller. Ishwara, Parama, Krishna. Satchit, Ananda, Vigraha. Anadiya, Adiya, Govinda. Sava, Karana, Karana. Right? Ishwara, Parama, Parameshwara means supreme controller. Who is the supreme controller? Ishwara, Parama, Krishna. It is, Brahma says, Krishna. Even Lord Brahma, he recognizes he is not the supreme controller. The controller is Krishna. Sach, Chid, Ananda, Vigraha. He is spiritual. He is on a different platform. He is not going through what we are going through. Anadiya, Adiya, Govinda, Sava, Karana, Karana. Everything comes from Govinda. Who is Govinda? He's a cowherd boy. Everything is coming from a cowherd boy. Look at him. Cowherd boy. Holding a flute. And everything is coming from him. He is the supreme controller. Even Lord Brahma gets bewildered by Krishna. That is called Brahma Vimohan Lila. Brahma thought, who is this boy? Yeah? He understood God has appeared on earth. So he looks down and he sees that one of the cowherd boys took food from God's plate and put it in his mouth. Right? And then God took food from his friend's plate and put it in his mouth. And then he thought, maybe this is not actually God. I should test the situation. So he comes down and he takes everyone away. Right? And then he comes back and they're all there again. And he thought, well, that's strange, I just took them all away. And then he looks back and they're all still there, and then he comes back again and they're all there again. Except the second time when he looks back, everyone suddenly has four-armed forms. And then he just thought, he is over his head. He just thought that I am dealing with something I can't even understand. It's a cowherd boy. He's holding a flute. So that's chapter 13. In chapter 14, he comes to Krishna and he apologizes. He says, I'm very sorry for taking all the cows and your friends, disturbing your pastimes. So then he begins to offer prayers. First he offers dandavats, which means he falls down. Lord Brahma is golden in complexion. So he's like a golden danda, a beautiful golden danda with these four heads. He bows down in prostrated obeisances, fearing that he has offended God. And then he stands up and he begins to offer most eloquent prayers in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. Sanskrit, beautiful Sanskrit slokas, which are quoted by all of our acharyas in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Krishna, the whole time that Lord Brahma is offering these prayers, Krishna has yogurt in his left hand. Right? Now, you never touch prasadam with your left hand. Right? We never touch prasadam with our left hand. We only eat with our right hand. Krishna has his yogurt in his left hand. And in between each finger, the acharya is described, I can't remember what he has, but he has like a piece of ginger between one finger. Between this finger, I think it's a little bit of chili. And between this finger, he has a little bit of lemon. So he's kind of mixing it together. He's binding up a little bit of chili, taking a bit of yogurt, mixing it all together, and he's sitting there. And this four-headed demigod is offering prayers in front of him. And he's just standing there, and he's just... He's like, what's all this about? Right? And at the end of him offering prayers, he finishes the 14th chapter, he finishes the prayers, and he looks at Krishna, waiting for a response, and Krishna just kind of shrugs and walks away. He doesn't even say anything. He just walks away. He just goes, I don't know what it's about. I don't know what this is about. Is this part of my pastime? I've never seen this before in Vrindavan. Who's the four-headed guy? I'm like that. And he just goes off with the cowherd boys. And they say, where have you been? He says, oh, I went to the forest and some four-headed guy came and I don't know. Anyway, let's have lunch. Like that, so this is the supreme controller, Parameshwara. He is in control. None of us are in control. We all want to be the controller. Why do we want to control? Because we want to enjoy. So because I want to enjoy, then I try to control everything so I can enjoy. But what can we control? What can we control? We have no control. No? As Burujan Prabhu always says, no one's cooperating with us anyway. We want everyone to cooperate with us and just make everything perfect and nice for us so that we can enjoy, and no one's cooperating. And after about 30, 40, 50, 60 years in the material world, then you realize, what's going on? No one's cooperating with me. I'm here to enjoy, and no one's understanding what it's all about. No one's worked it out yet. The problem is, we haven't worked it out yet. We're here trying to enjoy and expecting everyone to cooperate with us, and no one's cooperating with us. So what can we control? We can't control anything. We can't actually enjoy. Siddhoham. Siddha means perfection. I want everything in this world to be perfect. But nothing is perfect in this world. Have you noticed? What does perfection mean? Just like Prabhupada said, there's no happiness in the material world. But he said, maybe in Hawaii. Maybe in Hawaii. Maybe there's a little bit of happiness there. Hawaii's got the right weather, it's got the right fruits, it's got the right climate, it's got the right landscape like that. But Hawaii's got problems as well. There's problems everywhere in the material world. So we want to enjoy, we want to be the controllers, we want to be the enjoyers, we want everything to be perfect, it's not possible. And we try so hard to make everything perfect. Siddhoham Balavan. Balavan means, by my strength, I will make it perfect. So the more you try to make it perfect, the worse it gets. Have you ever noticed in your life? The harder you try to make everything perfect, the worse everything gets. The more effort you put into your material enjoyment, the worse it gets, especially as a devotee. We have to understand this principle. Right? For the non-devotees, they don't know any better. Non-devotee thinks, I will just try to enjoy. But as devotees, right, our material life is ruined. Right? We can never go back there. Sometimes devotees, they become bewildered and they try to go back and enjoy the material world. But as the example is given, it's like someone puts sand in the sweet rice. You're trying to enjoy it, but it's never the same ever again for a devotee. You go back to the material world, but it's just never the same. There's this little cowherd boy who keeps wrecking everything for you. No matter how hard you try, and the harder you try, the worse he makes it. And the whole time he's doing it, he's just laughing at you. The whole spiritual world is based upon everyone getting back at each other. That's the whole spiritual world. It's called rasa. Krishna, what do you think he does with his flute when he's not playing it? Right? He's poking his friends. That's what he does. He's always like that. And they're always doing the same thing to him. Have you seen the boys in Vrindavan? If you go to Vrindavan and you see the boys walking down the street, they're always hitting each other behind the ears. The boys walk down the street. I see in Vrindavan, like the bridge busy, the boys, they walk down the street and they hit each other behind the ears like that. It's just something they do as they're walking. Always giving each other a little slap. You know, because it's rasa, it's friendship, it builds excitement, it builds pleasure. Always just trying to get at each other. The whole spiritual world is based on this principle. And it gives Krishna great pleasure. Just like with Krishna and the gopis, Krishna is always trying to defeat the gopis and control the gopis for his pleasure. And they're always trying to defeat Krishna and control Krishna for their pleasure. Ultimately for his pleasure. So this competition is always going on. Between the gopis and between Krishna, between the cowherd boys and between Krishna. So when Krishna deals with all the devotees in the material world, he does the same thing. He's always playing with us. Now you think you'll go and enjoy now? I will make it very difficult for you. And Krishna's laughing the whole time. You try to go off and enjoy, and then he makes it a big mess, right? And he's just smiling. Because he's just waiting for you to come back and enjoy with him. So we have to understand, just like last night where we began the fifth canto in the Bhakti Vaibhav course. So in the very beginning of the fifth canto, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he makes a comment. And he says that when devotees experience impediments in their life, it is for two reasons. What are the two reasons why sometimes we have difficulty in our lives as devotees? Not as non-devotees, but as devotees. What are the two causes of our difficulty?
Material desires.
Yeah, you could say like that. Yeah, it's actually he gives these two reasons, but actually there are other reasons as well like that. The first reason he gives is because of offences, right? Because sometimes we commit offences in devotional service. So because we commit aparad or offences, right, our life becomes difficult. That's why devotees need to be trained and educated. ISKCON is meant for training and education. You're meant to come to the temple to learn to be trained and educated. Otherwise you commit offences, and those offences, they cause problems in your spiritual life. Even you don't realise it. Just like Prabhupada was in Bhaktivedanta Manor, and I think it was Jananda Maharaj was offering aarti to the deities. He told this story, I don't know if it was him who was offering the aarti or if it was someone else, but he told the story. And the devotee was offering the aarti, and then one Indian man came into the temple to offer obeisances to the deities while the aarti was going on. And he offered his obeisances, but you know, it's customary in the Hindu temples, they come in and they offer obeisances straight on, right? So if someone comes in, offers their obeisances straight on, then their feet are facing Prabhupada. And if you offer your obeisances straight on to Prabhupada, then your feet are facing Krishna. So that's an offence, that's an aparad. So Prabhupada came into the temple, and I think it was the devotee was offering the aarti, and the gentleman was offering his obeisances, but there was a picture of Prabhupada on the Vyasasan, and his feet were facing towards the guru. So then when the devotee turned around, when he was doing the aarti, he turned around and then he was offering the articles, and he saw Prabhupada was there, he saw the man was there, and he was not offering obeisances properly. Then Prabhupada said, "You should tell him. It is your duty to inform him that he is committing some offence." Like that. So it is our duty in the temple to train and to be trained. To understand etiquettes, to understand aparads. All of this is listed by Rupa Goswami. What chapter of the Nectar of Devotion deals with aparad? Chapter 8. Right? Chapter 8. Chapter 6, 64 items of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Right? And then chapter 8 is offences to be avoided. How many offences? How many offences are listed? 64. 64 offences, right? You have to learn to avoid. Right? Then 10 namaparads. Right? So 64 seva aparads, which means offences towards the deity, and 10 namaparads, offences towards the holy name. And then the greatest offence is Vaishnava aparad. Right? So you have to learn, what are these aparads? Right? It's an offence to bow down on one hand before the deity. It says in the Shastra. It's an offence. It's not a major offence. It's not like, you know, you're going to walk out of the temple and Krishna's, you know, just waiting there for you. Ha-ha! You did the wrong thing. You know, he's not like that. But it is an obstruction in your devotional service. And it means that you're not performing the activity properly. Why do we have to offer our obeisances with the nine parts of our body? What are the nine parts of our body that we have to offer the obeisances with? When you bow down to offer obeisances, what nine parts of the body must touch the ground? Head, yep. Hands, yep. That's true. And? Knees, yep. And? Feet, and? Elbows. Okay. So that means full obeisances. Right. So either you bow down, like full dandavat, right? That means all nine parts of the body are touching the ground. Or you're bowing down, I don't know how to say it, but you know how we crouch down like that. And all nine parts are touching the body. That means full submission. It means, Krishna, I'm giving you all of my limbs. This entire body, all the parts of this body are meant for your service. So we should be conscientious. Sometimes you see devotees come in and offer obeisances. Come in, offer obeisances to Prabhupada, don't even look at Prabhupada. Come and offer obeisances to Gaunatai, don't even look at them. Offer obeisances to Radha Balava, don't even look at them. Offer obeisances to Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, don't even look at them. Take Charanamrita, which is actually what I came here for in the first place, right? Because this tastes really good. And then walk out. What's that? Right? It's not conscientious. Prabhupada says first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So you have to be conscious of what you... So if you're bowing down on one hand, because you have something in your hand, your beads or whatever it is, bowing down, it's not full submission, it's not full conscientiousness. It means you're not fully respecting Krishna. You're not conscious of what you're doing. You're not submitting yourself fully at that moment to Krishna. So we have to be conscious of these things. Just like the other thing is also an aparat, right? You know, you see the thing where devotees, they put their head in the door of the temple to see if someone's there, right? And then their feet are still out, so they think, oh, I'm not in the temple, I don't have to offer my obeisances, right? Devotees go in, they go, and then Krishna's there, oh, hi Krishna, like that, and then back out again. No, what's that? You put your head in the door, you saw Krishna, right? You come in, it takes a few seconds, come in, offer your obeisances properly to the deities, and then go out. And then you see whoever you're looking for, they're there or they're not there. Do it properly. Otherwise it's aparad. Right? Otherwise it's an offence towards Krishna. Krishna's not an ordinary person. Right? Even like sometimes the curtain opens and the door opens for the deity room, and then momentarily you get a brief darshan of the deities, you're out in the courtyard. Right? So then you offer your obeisances. You just saw Krishna, you saw God. You have to offer your obeisances. That is the etiquette. Right? Another aparad which is mentioned is do not speak before the deity. Right? You see, after Bhagavatam class, quite often devotees get in little huddles and start having conversations. It's not really appropriate. When we're in the temple, the focus is meant to be on the deities. So it means, what do we do in the temple? Right? We chant japa, we do kirtan, we have Bhagavatam class, which is glorifying Krishna, like that. That is appropriate. And then it doesn't mean we can't talk to anyone. It means, you know, if it's related to service, you can say, oh Prabhu, what are we doing today for the Harinam? You can have a conversation, but not like just having some whimsical conversation. It's not really appropriate. Because you know, it means that you're not, sometimes you hear the conversations, they don't really have that much to do with Krishna. Right? So you have to be conscientious of these things. It right? Doesn't mean we have to walk around in fear. Right? It doesn't mean that Krishna is just sitting there waiting for everyone to, you know, make a mistake so he can, you know, Krishna doesn't, that's not where he gets his satisfaction from. But it means that we have to be conscientious of avoiding offences. Because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, this is what causes impediments in our bhakti. This causes impediments in our progress towards Krishna. All the different types of offences that we commit. Now, if you look at 64 Seva Aparads, you look at 10 Nam Aparads, and you look at Vaishnava Aparad, of all of them, which is the most severe? Okay, Vaishnava Aparad, right? Now, there's two Aparads, if you look at all of the Aparads together, two Aparads, or two offences, will hinder our progress the most. One is offending devotees, right? And the other one is chanting inattentively. These two things, which are both aparads, nam aparad, vaishnav aparad, and vaishnav aparad is also nam aparad. What is the first offence? To blaspheme the devotees, right? So these two offences, these will hinder your devotional service more than anything else. Now, what does it mean to blaspheme the devotees? Right? It means there are three types of offences. Corporal means physically offending a devotee, right? Physically harming a devotee, right? Verbal, which means speaking something harshly about a devotee or speaking something unnecessarily critical about a devotee, or mental, right? Thinking unnecessarily critical things about devotees. Those three things, they will interrupt your devotional service. So corporal, I don't think we have to worry about too much. No? We don't usually hit devotees. If you do, watch out. Your devotional services, you're in big trouble. You actually, if you physically attack a devotee, you have to be quite insane to do it. But if you ever did it, watch out. You know, because Krishna is a lot heavier than what you are. You know, it's not even thinkable. But if you do it, then we're finished. Okay. Then, verbal. Verbal means unnecessary criticism. Right? We do this all the time.
Right? You do it all the time. Hands up if you did not criticize any devotees unnecessarily yesterday. One, two, three, four, five. Very good. Okay, so we should take shelter of these five Vaishnavas like that. But most of us do it regularly. We unnecessarily criticize devotees. And you hear, quite often when devotees get together, what do? We basically criticize other devotees. That's the level of Sangha. That's called Vaishnav Sangha, Satsangha. Let's all get together, or we're devotees, we all wear tilak, and let's all criticize each other. Very advanced association. Very advanced level of consciousness. Right? It's neophyte consciousness. Right? The purpose of associating with devotees is to remember Krishna. That is the principal reason why we come together. Now, what is the anecdote or the remedy if we have a tendency to criticize devotees unnecessarily? Right? The anecdote or the remedy is to glorify devotees. Right? If you see some problem, look for the good point. Right? Is anyone all bad? No one's all bad. Everyone's got some good quality. So you look for the good quality. Like that. And that will elevate your consciousness. Right? When you criticize a devotee, it degrades your consciousness. It takes you away from Krishna. Right? So there is corporal, verbal, and then mental. Right? Don't think, because it's just in your mind, it's not an offense. It says in Kali Yuga, you don't get reactions for what you think. Yeah, and why does it say that? Yeah, because we wouldn't be here anymore. We would be burnt to ashes. Right? We would be drowned or set on fire, or you know, we'd have a tornado hit us or something, or an earthquake or something. You know, if we got the reactions for what we think, right, we'd just be finished. Right? You wouldn't even exist anymore. You'd just be your karma, the karma you would get for that would just obliterate your body. So therefore, if you don't stop this tendency in your mind to criticize devotees, right, it will come out in your actions and it will come out in your words. Right? Because what it is in the subtle, it comes out in the gross. Right? That's basic, that's the law of nature. Whatever's going on in there, it comes out. So you can say, well, I don't say anything bad about devotees. I think bad about them, but I don't say anything bad about them. Right? So if you don't stop it, it's just going to come out eventually anyway. So therefore, you have to learn to purify your mind. Right? So this is Vaishnava Aparad, and the other main impediment is our inattentive chanting. You have to work, you have to make it a priority to work on your chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Just like once a year we have the Kartik Vrat. So what I do personally as a devotee, what I do every year when Kartik comes, the rest of the year, okay, we make compromises, right? We have so much service to do, so we do our service. Sometimes our sadhana gets a little neglected, not too much, but it might get a little. But then when Kartik comes, then I just make it a conscientious effort. Okay, I put everything else, right, on the back burner. Everything else becomes secondary except my sadhana. And especially my chanting of the holy names. And you spend a good month, right, going to Mangalati every day, right, making sure you get up early every day and chanting quality rounds every day, right, and improve your chanting, right, so that then you can cultivate proper chanting. Inattentive chanting, you cannot make proper advancement in Krishna consciousness as long as you chant inattentively. You might as well just understand the point. Your advancement will be very slow. Chanting means chanting. Chanting means kirtan. Right? Whenever you pick up your beads, it's kirtan. Right? It's not something else. Right? It's japa jnana. Jnana means meditation. It is a meditation on the holy name. You're meditating on the holy name. Just like if you go to some meditation camp, right? What do people do when they're meditating? They sit still, and then what else do they do?
Think of nonsense.
Thank you for your help. What else do they do? No, I'm talking about the worries. I'm just talking about meditation, right? If you're doing meditation, you're concentrating, right? You're stopping external activities. No, that's what meditation. If you go to some meditation course, right? Everyone's not just walking around and like, you see the way devotees chant japa sometimes, like walking around like. That's not chanting, right? That's not chanting. It's called inattentive chanting. It's not chanting. It's not attentive chanting. It's inattentive chanting. You can chant like that. Bahu janma kariyati shravana kirtana. Bahu janma. You can chant like that for birds. You'll keep coming back to ISKCON. That's no problem. Right. Prabhupada's built a house in which the whole world can live. You'll come back, you'll keep getting prasadam. Right. There's going to be brahmachari and brahmacharini ashrams for you to live in and get mental. Right. All the facilities still going to be there. You can keep coming back and doing the same. You can keep doing it birth after birth. Yeah. ISKCON's still going to be there for you. Yeah, you can come back and do the whole thing again next lifetime. Just come back and get mental and just chant really poor rounds. Right? And eat the wrong prasadam and get sick. Just, you can do that lifetime after lifetime. No problem. It's all here for you. But if you want to go back to Godhead, it all comes down to these two points. Vaishnav Seva, Nama Ruchi. Jiva Doya, 3 points you can say. Lord Chaitanya's entire mission, right? His entire mission is just these 3 points. Right? Vaishnav Seva, serving devotees, not criticizing them, glorifying them, serving them. Vaishnav Seva, Nam Ruchi, developing a taste for chanting the holy name. You have to have a taste for chanting. I was reading yesterday, Prabhupada said, when you're chanting, when you say Hare, you should be thinking of Radharani. When you say Krishna, you should be thinking of Krishna. When you say Rama, you should be thinking of Krishna. And when you say Hare Krishna, and you chant the whole mantra, you should be thinking of their pastimes. Because their pastimes are contained within that mantra. So if that's not happening yet, then work on it. But that's what you should be getting to. That is the goal. All right. So, Vaishnava Seva, Nam Ruchi, Jiva Doya. Jiva Doya means be merciful to the conditioned souls. So on Sunday, the greatest mercy for the last 35 years is going to be shown on the conditioned souls. Jagannath is coming out of the temple. First time in 35 years. He's coming out. What's that? Oh, you did 78 as well? Okay, so how long is that? 33 years. About 32. Okay, about 32. I didn't realise there's another one after that. Okay, so then 33 years, still a long time. Jagannath is coming out of the temple to conquer Melbourne. It is his city. He owns Victoria. Right? It's his desh. Right? It is Jagannath desh. Right? It is Jagannath's place. But no one realizes it. So he's coming out to remind everyone. I am a Jagannath. I am Lord of the universe. Right? Come and worship me. So this is Jiva Doya. Right? The Lord is showing mercy to the conditioned souls. And what are we? I was reading yesterday, we are the monkeys. Remember when Lord Ram conquered Lanka? How did he conquer Lanka? How did he defeat the Rakshasas? With the monkeys. And Prabhupada said, Prabhupada was indicating that we are like that. We are the monkeys, Kali Yuga devotees. But we're going to march. We might be monkeys, but we know who our master is. And we will do anything for our master. So on Sunday, we're all going to cooperate together and we're going to show Melbourne something it has not seen before. Like that. And try to attract everyone, because Krishna is all attractive, Jagannath is all attractive. Attract them back to the spiritual world. So this is Jiva Doya. So if we dedicate our life to these three things, our life will become successful. That is the purpose of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we have discussed.
I have a question, not necessarily all it needs to do with this. Prabhupada was very much in favour to facilitate simple living and high thinking, returning to the farm type life. But I noticed that lots of the people were sort of resisting going to the farm, doing that, and they didn't want to stay in the city. So I noticed that there's not very many devotees going down to the farm and actually doing what Prabhupada was sort of saying, that it would be most conducive to us following those things you just said. So what's the remedy for that? How can you get the devotees to be more interested in that farm life? They seem reluctant to leave the city temple and the city life and stuff. So how can you induce them to, you know?
How can we induce them?
Well,
I'm going back there tomorrow, so we can hire a bus, and everyone gets on the bus and we go to the farm. Like that, so. Basically, the reason why a lot of devotees can't live on simple living, high thinking, because they're not brought up like that. In Kali Yuga, we're not brought up like that. So it's difficult to go to something which you're conditioned not to be like. It's difficult for the word. That's why they find it difficult. So, that wasn't Prabhupada's only desire, right? His desire was to preach in the cities. And the farms are meant to show our philosophy and practice. So if you do stay in the city, if you're attached to this way of life, stay here and preach, and you'll get the same benefit. Or you go to the farm and you preach by showing an example of how to live in Vedic culture, like that. So both are equal in merit, like that. You'll see in the world in due course of time, people will have to go back to that way of life anyway, because the world's on the verge of some sort of the world is on the verge of difficulties. So we'll see people will be forced to go back to that way of life, like that. They won't go back by their own accord. Some will, but most won't. So. Any other questions or comments, Simon? Speak up.
We see lately that a lot of, as you were saying, floods, earthquakes, whatever it is. And the verse just spoke about floods and rings around the sun and all of these omens, something that's about to happen. So we take these as this is the bad thing that's happening, but are these just omens?
We can't say for sure. It might be, but it might not be. We don't know. Prabhupada said if there's nuclear war, Prabhupada said that if the demigods, Indra and Vayu and Agni and Yama and, you know, Vayu, I mean the Varuna, the powerful gods, Prabhupada said if they don't want that kind of destruction on the earth, as the missiles go past, and the missiles travel really fast, when they go like that, it takes like 3 or 4 minutes or something for the missile to go from Russia to America or something, so that's how fast they travel. Prabhupada said if they want, Indra can just grab them mid-air and just go, throw them into outer space. So it's up to, there's other powers that be as well. So we don't know what's going to happen. It might be what's going on at the moment, because you can see there's definitely stuff going on. There's definitely an increase going on at the moment, and there's predictions that in 2012 things will kind of head to like a much larger scale. So we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know, but for at least for me and for devotees, it's an impetus to become more serious in Krishna consciousness. Don't have faith that material society has the answers, because it's collapsing. And then Prabhupada said, if there's nuclear, if devotees said to Prabhupada, if there's nuclear war, what will we do? Prabhupada said, before the war, distribute books. Prabhupada said, after the war, distribute books. Same, like that. So for devotees, we just keep going on the same. But we're not ignorant. We don't not take notice of what's going on, because there's obviously something happening. It may collapse like that, or it may collapse slowly. Either way, it's not working. It's starting to collapse anyway, so. Yeah, I mean, you can't say. No one can say. Like, I asked Pallad Swami, who's here, and he's an astrologer. I said, what's going on, Maharaj? He said, same old.
you know, it's just the material world. It's what the material world does. Like that, maybe it's going to get worse, but this is the material world. It's the same old. Yeah, he didn't say, oh, on this day it's all going to fall apart. It's just like, that might happen or it might not. So just become more serious. Prabhupada wrote it like that. That's Prabhupada's translation. Who have dedicated their life to propagating the holy name of the Lord. It just means, it's the actual offence is called Sadhu Ninda. Sadhu Ninda means to offend devotees, sadhus, like that. So, according to the level of advancement of the devotee, that much, if you offend the topmost devotee, the reaction is much more, just like if the rock falls from the top of the hill, it's going to hurt a lot more, right? So if you offend the much more advanced devotee, the reaction will be much more severe. But that doesn't mean, okay, this devotee is only not so advanced, so I can offend them, that doesn't matter so much. No. It means devotee is devotee. But obviously, according to the level of bhakti, then you'll get more reaction like that. But the principle is that we should not offend sadhus. So Prabhupada has written like that, that's his translation, but the actual Sanskrit is sadhu ninda. So it just means do not offend sadhus, devotees. So if we are a devotee, we see everyone else as being a better devotee than us, isn't it? That's actual. So we don't see like that because we're not so advanced yet. We think, oh, okay, this one's better than me, that one's better than me, that one's about the same, that one's definitely less, right? This one's like, that's how we see. That's how we actually see. You know, my mind doesn't go like, oh, everyone's more advanced. I don't see like that. My mind says, oh, this one's more advanced, that one's less advanced. I should offer respect to that one, but not so much to that one. Calculating all the time, but that's not correct. Right? Correct is actually to see the devotees as being all more advanced. Then you will not offend any of them. Like that. Does that answer your question?
But Justin, why did he mention that propagating the...
Because we're a preaching movement. Prabhupada emphasized preaching. That's what separates our movement from the other Gaudiya movements. The amount of emphasis on preaching. No one else preaches like us. So to blaspheme devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. Like that. If you read the pastime of Lord Shiva and Daksha, beginning in the fourth canto, Prabhupada explains that there are the Brahmanas. Brahmanas means, like if you go to India, they're all Brahmanas, they're all very pukka, they do all the service. There was a nice story that some of Prabhupada's disciples went to the Radharaman temple in Vrindavan to have darshan. And after the darshan, after the aati, the pujaris said to the devotees, to the Western devotees who came to see Radharaman, the pujaris said, if you keep doing your devotional service, in your next life you may take birth in Vrindavan and you can worship Radharaman. So devotees went back to Prabhupada and they said to Prabhupada, the pujari said this. And Prabhupada said, and you should have said to him, if you keep worshipping Radharaman, in your next lifetime you'll take birth in America and become a book distributor. So Prabhupada actually saw. That was what was different with Prabhupada to everyone else. Prabhupada saw that preaching is the highest activity. So that's why he always emphasized like that. Is that okay? Okay. Any other question? Comment?
You mentioned there are two reasons you would experience impediments instead of
inheritance. There's more than two, but those two are mentioned.
So you mentioned one is offense. What was the second
one? Oh, I didn't get to the second one. Okay. The second one is Krishna himself. We ran out of time. But the second reason why there are impediments, sometimes there's things going on in our life and we can't understand. Why is this happening to me? Right? Sometimes Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says it's because Krishna is doing it to you to purify you. So we always complain, oh, it's not going the way I want it, and my life isn't the way I want. Maybe Krishna is doing it to you. Maybe Krishna is trying to make you more detached from Maya and more attached to him. Like that. So we didn't elaborate on that because that takes a lot of time to. Is it okay? One
question. Can you want to tell us something?
Don't have time for that. Today is Vasant Panchami. In Vrindavan, in India, it is the first day of spring. It's very today is very auspicious. Today is the appearance day of Lakshmi Priya, the wife of Lord Chaitanya. Today is the appearance day of Raghunath Das Goswami, of Raghunandanacharya, of who's the other person out there? Pundarik Vijayaniti. And it is the disappearance day of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Today is an incredibly auspicious day. Any service you do today, if you pray to these acharyas, you'll get much more like that. It's very today is also Saraswati Puja. Like that. This particular day is very auspicious like that. But we don't have time to speak on it. Okay, so any other question, comment?
Just a few points about another question that I